I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Butchery. This evening, we'll be talking about some of our most effective spells.
And we'll be sharing a little bit of insight into our personal philosophies on spellcrafting.
Hello! Welcome back!
Welcome back indeed!
Yeah, so we decided to take a little break from our hiatus. Hiatus. No, but anyway, so we want to do a little special episode, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about our sort of best ever, greatest hits of spell casting.
Volume 7.
If you're looking for volumes 1 through 6, they're not available anymore.
So.
Anyway, all right, so this time we're going to be talking a little bit about our sort of best ever spells that we've had a good bit of success with. Mm-hmm. Spells we turn to over and over again in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of our favorites, but also just most effective.
Yeah, was it really worked for us.
Mm-hmm. And in the process of doing that, we'll probably get a little bit into how we think those spells work, but also how we think spells work in general for us.
Right.
Sort of our personal philosophy.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll be interesting.
I hope so too.
Okay, so do you want to start?
Sure. All right. Well, I'll start with, let's see, one I've talked about a good bit before, but I figure it's worth mentioning it again. Uh-huh. Honey jars.
Okay.
Honey jars tend to be one of the simplest spells I do. They're one of the most effective spells I do. I've used honey jars to sweeten everyone from potential employers to friends that I'm not having the best relationship with at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've used honey jars on people I've never met before. I'm not going to get too far into that, but I honey jarred somebody who later became a very good friend of mine.
Oh.
Not you.
No, I would hope not.
I'm letting you know that. but I honey jarred somebody before I ever even met that person because I knew that there was, this is going to sound awful, I knew that I needed something from them.
Mm-hmm.
And not something like, something awful or bad or anything like that. Or that was like, you know, I need money from them or
right.
Something like that, so I'm going to sweeten them up. But it was one of those situations where I knew that I wanted to get to know that person better because I felt the relationship had a lot to offer.
Okay.
As a friendship. And it did. And it still does. It's actually a very, very good friendship right now. You're looking at me, you're just like,
I'm wondering who it is. I wonder if
I'm
know
not
them.
Telling you, you do know them, but you don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, so yeah. That's been one of my most effective spell casting techniques is to do honey jars. Just a quick rehash on how you do a honey jar.
Yeah.
In case people haven't listened to that yet. First of all, you can go listen to our bottle spells episode, Witch Bottles episode,
mm-hmm.
which is another one of the specials. We give pretty good detailed instructions there. Summary, get a jar, take a piece of paper with the person's name on it, fill the jar with honey, and plunge that name into the honey.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring your fingers back out, they'll be nice and sticky and gooey with delicious honey. Eat the delicious honey as long as you're not allergic to bee pollen.
Yeah.
Or anything else in honey. If you are, you can use molasses, you can use sugar, anything sweet. You can use syrup. I've seen people use like maple syrup.
Oh, okay.
So, whatever's, and think about regionally appropriate stuff. Like here in the South, molasses would be very, very good because we use a lot of molasses.
Yeah. But I mean, honey is pretty regional as well.
Honey is regional, especially if you're using something local.
Yeah.
But we have before.
Mm-hmm.
If you're up in Vermont, though, maple syrup might be a perfect choice for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly.
You do that all the time. And you can expand that a little bit by adding personal effects or whatever to the jar. Pieces of hair or whatever you have of the other person.
Hair. Yummy.
Delicious hairy honey. I would recommend doing the name paper first, licking your fingers, and then adding the hair and not worrying about the licking any further. But yeah, so that's the basics of honey jars or sweetening jars. And all right, what about you, Lane? What's your first spell of the evening?
Actually, speaking of first spells, I'd like to talk about my first ever spell. It was actually really effective.
I thought that was going to be a lot dirtier than it was. I could talk about my first ever... Oh?
No.
Not that kind of an episode, folks. It's late, we're tired, but not that late, not that tired.
Bear with us, Corey's loopy tonight.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, my first spell was just a really simple candle spell. Like, really simple. Like, I had a candle, I lit it, I sort of, like, thought and said my intentions over it for a little while, let it burn, and that was that.
That sounds awfully simple.
Yeah, and, I remember it was because I was having trouble with, it was an ex-boyfriend, now that I think about it. We had always been friends, and, you know, we dated for, like, a month or two, mm-hmm. and that was that. And, but we were still in the same friend group. Mm-hmm. So, we never stopped seeing each other altogether. So, I don't know. He was just being really abrasive and sometimes just downright mean to me. Mm. So all I wanted was for him to just stop being mean, I guess.
And just treat you like a friend or a civil acquaintance or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It was just sort of a friendship spell, just like you said, treat me civilly. You know, I was like, mm-hmm. I don't even necessarily want good treatment, but neutral treatment would be just mm-hmm. fine. And I swear it was crazy. The next day I went in to school and he was just fine. And like, I hadn't mentioned it to anyone, but a friend actually came up to me and said, this particular person, we'll call him John. John has been really nice to you today. What is going on? And I was just like, well, and I told her about it because, that was mm-hmm. one of the members of my witchy first group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, she was like, holy crap, that's really cool. And, like I said, it was really simple because, it was my first spell, but to sort of get into like to the philosophy a little bit that mm-hmm. we promised, I tend to think that that worked because it helped change my viewpoint a little bit as well. Because I went in there thinking, okay, well, my spell's going to work. He's going to be nice to me, so I have to be nice to him, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, it changed my attitude, which helped change his. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't feeding off each other's negativity anymore.
Oh, I see. So you'd sort of armed yourself with this this good energy front.
Yeah.
And he couldn't help but be influenced by that.
Right.
That's interesting. It's funny, because normally I take an almost opposite tack. I don't think of it as a psychological thing.
I usually don't, but I do think that one was partially.
And I can totally see that. And I actually, when I think of it the way that you're explaining it, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like you're carrying around the spell.
Oh.
And when you get to them, because it's changed you, it changes them too.
Right.
I can kind of make that work in my head a little bit better.
Okay.
So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you remember, where did you find the spell? Where did you learn it? How did you come up with it?
There wasn't anything specific that I did that I got from a book, but I've been reading a lot at that point. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of Cunningham. I read a lot of Ravenwolf. and a few others that I can't even name right now. Pretty much just anything I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And, which was very hard at that time just because I wasn't driving and,
and where you were living.
Right.
Didn't have a lot of access.
Right. And, we've all heard the stories about how my mother reacted. So.
Yeah. Tiny cauldron on your dresser? No, not my daughter. No more wire. No more tiny cauldron. Her mother is not that way. Before.
No, she's not. She's awesome. But, that part of life, we just don't get along on. So anyway.
So that one sort of came out of. You'd been reading and reading and reading, but it wasn't a specific spell that you turned to. It was one that you sort of had organically synthesized out of a lot of other material.
Yeah, I would say so. But, I don't think it was that much of a feat because it was lighting a candle.
No, I think you're right, but I think it's an interesting thing. That's where you started.
Yeah, I've always been drawn to candle magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, candle magic and personal synthesis, I think, is very interesting.
Hmm.
Like, you started kind of in that intuitive vein.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I think that's great. I think that's really... It gives me insight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it for mine. What about you?
All right, my next one. These are ones that I've actually only really learned fairly recently.
I noticed that. I actually wanted to ask you about that. All mm-hmm. the ones on your list are recently learned, and they're mostly like hoodoo type stuff. I mean, that one mm-hmm. isn't, but
right,
it's more, it's New World type stuff. And you worked in mm-hmm. European witchcraft for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So is there any of that that stuck with you?
No. Well, yes and no. Most of that has to do with ritual.
Okay.
And it's not really spells. And that's something I kind of figured out.
Honestly, I think that's the case with a lot of it.
Right.
In my opinion.
Is you wind up looking at it and going, oh, wait, you know, I am doing magic of a kind, but right. it's a very different. It's not a spell. It's not trying to get something that I want or need.
Right.
Anymore. You know, if I go back into my roots, where I really started was doing folk magic. Basically out of the Cunningham books, you know, mm-hmm. doing the rain magic and the, mm-hmm. the, you know, where you would, you know, take the snow, melt the snow, that yeah. kind of stuff.
Trying to think. I still have a jar of snow water in my, you know, supply cabinet. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you never know mm-hmm. when that type of stuff is going to come in handy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then, like there's one spell, I don't know if it's in Cunningham or not, but I really liked it and I tried it once. And This isn't really going into the successes category, but I had really wanted something. I think it was, this is going to sound ridiculous. I think it was PlayStation when PlayStations were still kind of
uh-huh.
the hot new thing. And the spell involved writing whatever it was you wanted on a piece of paper, putting it in the pot and planting something on the pot. And as it grew,
right.
then your wish would come into fruition. The plant died. And I didn't get a PlayStation for quite a while. So it doesn't really fall into the successes category.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, that was the kind of stuff I liked doing, started.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also had that religious side of it, and the religious side led me into the traditional witchcraft
mm-hmm.
Aspect of it. And I don't know, like, you know, the folk magic is really, you know, where my heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And the witchcraft is where my head is.
Yeah.
So I like doing the rituals, and I like doing the spirit work and the contacting the dead and trance work and things like that's fascinating to me, but mm-hmm. you know, meeting these entities is great. Going out to the crossroads and things like that's fantastic, but it's this stuff. We keep tapping this piece of paper that you cannot see because you are listening to us and not watching us. So we should probably actually mention the spell that started this whole
conversation. Yeah. Yes.
These are powwow charms that I learned. One is the blood stopping charm and one is a burn stopping charm. The burn stopping charm I know comes from John George Homan's Powwows with a Long Lost Friend. And it basically just goes, three men went walking in the desert. They praised the burning and the heat. They praised that it might quickly cease. They praised that it might not increase. I think I may have flipped those last two lines. It might be they pray that it might not increase. They pray that it might quickly cease. And you say this over and over again while holding your hands above a burn, blowing on the burn, and it cools the fire and makes it so that it doesn't hurt as much and usually it heals a lot faster, goes away pretty quickly. And I've burned myself on the stove several times, and that's usually the first thing I'll do is I'll kind of blow on it and say mm-hmm. that little thing, and I forget about it within a few minutes.
Mm.
So that one may be a psychological thing right. for all I know. Because I haven't really used that one on another person yet.
Right.
But
very interesting.
But it has been effective. Then the other one that I do
mm-hmm.
is the blood stopping charm. And this one, I'm reasonably sure this one's also in the Homan book, but it's one that I've seen a lot of places and I just sort of picked it up. And actually I love it because it was one of the ones that I memorized. And then the first time I used it, it worked.
Just wow.
bang out of the gate. And it's the blood stopper charm.
Okay.
The blood stopper charm involves saying these specific phrases from the book of Ezekiel in the Bible. I believe it's Ezekiel 16 or something like that. But the phrases themselves are, and when I passed by thee and saw thee polluted in thy blood, I said to thee while I was in thy blood, live. Yea, I said unto thee while thou was in thy blood, live.
I have heard that somewhere.
I think you've heard me say it, because I think we were doing something for the podcast one time, and we tested it out, and it was one of the ones I used. And, I mean, if you've been in any church, good chance you've heard it.
I don't know.
But you say that.
I think I've heard it in, like, a movie or something.
Possible.
I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It just feels very familiar to me.
That's interesting. It's one of the few that, I don't want to say one of the few. It's one of the ones, though, that makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck if I carry it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel it. It really works. You know, if you get a cut, you know, I've used it a few times on cuts. You say it over this cut three times, the cut stops bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
That's really impressive to me.
Now, have you used this one on any other people, or is it just you?
Just me, but this is one of the situations where it can't be psychological. Because your body's not going to stop spurting blood, just psychologically. Mm. I mean, maybe it would to some extent, but it's something else. Like, that verifies it to me as being, like, there's blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what that is. You know, there's blood coming out of you, and it stopped bleeding. This is magic.
Right.
So, big stuff. So I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one, again, I've used on myself a few times. Clearly, I'm very clumsy if I'm burning myself and cutting myself constantly. I've given away my hand. I cook and I garden a lot, so both of these are very useful spells to have at hand.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be interested to try those myself.
Mm-hmm. You totally should. And there's a tradition about the blood-stopping charm that a man can only pass it to a woman, and a woman can only pass it to a man, and you can only tell three people in your whole life.
Interesting.
And it depends on who you talk to. Some people don't make the three people, tell three people in your whole life rule, and some people don't make the gender rule. And then there's this roundabout way of getting around it, which is if you talk to an inanimate object in the room
mm-hmm.
while other people are listening, that doesn't count as telling.
Oh.
Which is why I can say it to this computer.
Oh, because I started to say, you're telling like a couple, you know.
But I'm not. I'm telling this computer.
Oh.
So, well, you know, that's how that works.
Interesting.
And it's a really funny sort of equivocation, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of magic tends to be equivocation.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, so yeah, that's that one. What about you? What's your next?
You actually made me think of this. I had kind of forgotten about it. Ha ha ha, forgotten. But it's my little spell for finding things.
Oh, yay. We both have to talk a little bit about
it. Yeah, because you have one as well.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my friend Amy wrote this, or, you know, just kind of made it up in her head. And we lived together at one point, and we would use that for random things around the house. And, like, it would help if we would stand there and do it together and, you know, like, chant it a couple mm-hmm. times. And I guess I'll go ahead and say it, even though it sounds a little, like, elementary now because we wrote it so long ago. But mm-hmm. anyway, it's you kind of stop yourself and kind of close your eyes and you sort of, I guess, cast your net out. Does that make sense? Like your mental net? Okay.
Totally makes sense.
And you just say, you know, I seek an object that's been lost to find it where it last was tossed. This item that's been tossed around, what once was lost must now be found. And I usually say it a couple, you know, two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm, and then I just go, like, I just, wherever I think of next, I just go and look. And I keep kind of muttering this under my breath. And it's actually helped me find my way in the forest as well. When Corey and I did this ritual together, and he went out and set it up while I waited. And then he came back and it was really late at night and we were lost and, you know,
it was an interesting evening.
It was very interesting. But, so we finally get out there and we're coming back and, you know, we're in the middle of the woods and, you know, we're trying to come back out to the main road and, we just can't find it. We're turned around, you know, we don't have a compass or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I start chanting this and Corey doesn't know this at the time, but you know, I just say, okay, it's this way and we go. And then there was the road
mm-hmm.
and we started seeing the, you know, the street lights and everything. And, I told Corey that later that I had been chanting that. And he was like, oh, okay, well, that works.
Yeah.
So.
And it was appropriate.
But yeah, I mean, I cannot.
So well that evening.
I cannot tell you how many times I've used it that it's worked. And even if I don't find the object, like, I remember what I did with it. Like, mm-hmm. if I've given it away or something.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a t-shirt I'm looking for. Like, oh, yeah, I gave that to Goodwill last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I haven't found it, but I still know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Amy's used it several times over
mm-hmm.
for things. So it definitely works.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? I know you have a finding spell.
I use almost the exact same thing. The words are different.
Okay.
But the techniques you described, are exactly the same. That casting the net makes complete sense because it feels like you're throwing this thing out there, remembering
your feelers.
Yeah, it's this, like, you sort of get this mental map of everything around you.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost a 3D walkthrough.
It is.
And you say this, and as you say it, you just sort of let these things float past your vision, and certain things will lock.
Yes.
And that's where you go. And that's absolutely what I do. Now, I was raised Catholic, so mine is a really sort of watered-down, diminished version of the St. Anthony prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even remember the full St. Anthony prayer because this is the only one I know anymore, which is, Tony, Tony, look around and help me find what can't be found.
Yeah.
That's it. And I do the same thing you do. I'm like, Tony, Tony, look around, help me find what can't be found. Tony, Tony, look around, help me find what can't be found. And I go on and on and on and on and on. And I just sort of let it drift through my mind. And I'd say about 80 to 85% of the time, I will find what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, it's like you said, I'll either remember what I did with it, or I'll get this really strong sense of, you can't find this.
Right.
This is not going to be, you cannot do this. And I know that I'm done.
Yeah.
Whatever it was I'm looking for, that's just not going to happen.
So you either find it or kind of just stop looking. Like, no, you can't find it today.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a very definite
feeling.
Sense.
Yeah, I agree.
You know exactly.
Like, I get the same thing.
I know
thing
exactly
too.
Where that is now. And it's one of those things where you can even be like, oh, I know it's exactly in that room. And then you get in that room, you're like, I know it's somewhere over in this part of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And you find it. Or you're like, no, everything is kind of a blur. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how that is absolutely the same thing.
Yeah.
The words are different, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, but I think it puts you in that same state of mind
mm-hmm.
to sort of help retrace your steps and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe have something else helping kind of guide you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting a little extra help, like you said, but almost putting yourself into a trance.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's very effective. So, awesome. Good one.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Lane.
Okay, so you next.
You have more. You do one more.
Okay, I'll do another one.
You're the more successful witch.
Oh, yeah, right. You're more prolific. How about that? Well, I can talk about this one. I mean, I've talked about this one before, the weather magic I did, like the knot magic. Knot magic has always been really effective for me. And, yeah, I mean, there's not really much to say about it. Just that, you know, like you do this certain spell, like, I feel like some people have heard about it and like it's old hat to them. And some people have never heard of it, but, the knot of one, this spell's begun, knot of two, it cometh true, you know, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always did. And it's always worked, so.
Very cool. I think, didn't we find out that was a Doreen Valiente?
I think you told me that, yeah.
Like a version of it is a Doreen Valiente poem.
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I read it in, I can't remember now, but it wasn't her book that I read it in.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that's, it's so good. It's such an effective thing that's been disseminated in a lot of places.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a common knowledge now.
Yeah, that's something that we'll want to get into a little bit, I think,
mm-hmm.
is sort of the idea of witchcraft as, or spellcasting, spellcrafting, as a knowledge, sort of an innate thing,
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, do you turn to a specific book? Do you turn to a Doreen Valiente book to do a spell?
I think it really depends on the type of spell you're going to do, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know, some feel just... If I need a particular something, sometimes it feels more intuitive to do a certain thing. But like sometimes I have no idea what I want to do, and so I'll go to a book and try to find something that I guess corresponds with what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of vagaries. Sorry.
Well, no. I mean, I think that that's an interesting point, though, is that you do turn to a book. But in your case, don't you sort of turn to the book as you're looking for inspiration for a spell as opposed
to
like a recipe?
Yeah. Yeah, I rarely do it like a recipe. Like if it says, you know, you need this, 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 and this. Well, if I don't have it on hand, then I'll just wing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but some people are like, they have to have
mm-hmm.
the ingredients. And it's funny because I used to be like that. I used to be like, well, I need, you know, a rose petals for mm-hmm. this. When now, like, I would just say, oh, well, I have rose oil. You know, I'll use that instead.
Right.
But I guess it's from years of not having that stuff on hand, you know?
And I think trial and error to some extent.
Yeah, and, you know, having substitutions work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But...
And you kind of know the rules a little bit now. Like, you know why that substitution will work.
Right.
And that other thing won't.
Or why I'm using that particular thing. Like, why that's called for.
Mm-hmm.
So what I, you know, can substitute it for.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. Like, there are certain spells that I definitely have learned from books.
Mm-hmm. Like what? You remember any?
Well, like the powwow.
Oh, yeah. That definitely.
Charms. Those are, you know, the blood-stopping charm, not as much from books, because it wasn't until I heard it spoken out loud once that I was like, oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But the fire-stopping charm, the burn-stopper, was definitely out of a book. And this, I mean, it's pretty much as written.
Right.
But then, you know, I've had my share of, synthetic moments where
mm-hmm.
it just is all this stuff sort of comes together and it clicks. Like, I had a friend who had lost her watch while she was teaching one day.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really upset because it was a very nice watch, and I think it was a family gift to her.
Okay.
And she couldn't remember where she had put it. And, you know, for some reason, out of nowhere, it clicked in my head to say, tie a yellow ribbon around your left wrist where you would normally have worn it. You'll find it. And the next day she found it. And it just clicked. It was just that thing. And I know that, you know, there are certain aspects of that work. Based on what I had read before.
Right.
You know, it's a sort of a sympathetic magic. You're creating a tie
mm-hmm.
between where you kept the watch and that watch itself. And yellow is the color, you know, yellow for remembrance. It's why we have those yellow ribbons for remembering our soldiers overseas.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, it's all these things that sort of synthetically coalesced and clicked in my head.
Right. But
wasn't conscious at the time.
Yeah, but that makes sense because you're just building on knowledge that you already have, which is why it's so important to read the basics first. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of diving into these huge tomes,
right.
You know, like, that's why, you know, we talk a lot about there really being a place for these, you know, these Wicca 101 books.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, a place for the newbies.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people, I've been hearing a lot of debate about, you know, some of the airy, fairy, fluffy bunny,
mm-hmm.
you know, groups. And don't get me wrong, like, I have my elitism. I admit it, I'm fairly elitist about what I do personally. And I want it to be authentic, and I want it to be connected to this longstanding tradition. But I totally understand when people are, when they're starting out in this, and they have their very specific steps that they have to go through
mm-hmm.
to get comfortable with each part of this path.
Right.
And I get that. There's a really neat podcast out right now called Pagan Hooligans. Which is, it's these two people, Isaac and Jasmine, and it's day one. From day one, they decided they were going to be pagan. They started recording.
Oh.
And following their journey, and they've just gone through, I think, a couple of their first rituals, and they've had some really neat experiences.
Very interesting.
It's so good. It's so, and they're so funny. They're so likable. So if you're listening, Isaac and Jasmine, you guys rock.
I'll have to listen to that. That is awesome. You know, though, I don't know if I'd have the guts to do that.
It's bold.
Because of the backlash that some newbies really get.
Yes.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think that's the case in anything you take up kind of, I guess, late in life.
Mm-hmm.
But, wow. Brave. Because, you know, I kept a diary when I first started. It was just about, like, my witchy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, God, going back and reading it now, I want to burn it. It is so embarrassing, like, some of the stuff that I said.
But it's so good that you did that, because you can look back and go, that's what the 16-year-old who's, you know, dressed all in goth or is wearing glitter and fairy wings, that's what they're going through.
Yeah.
And it helps. It really helps, I think, because it makes us not sit there and go, oh, those people, they're giving us a bad name.
Right.
No, they're just a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally cool. That was a weird digression. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was, but that's okay.
But anyway, so yes, I do think that there's absolutely a place for that 101 fundamental knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wind up with some really good stuff out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to start somewhere.
You definitely do. And you don't want to start, quite frankly, you don't want to start by opening the Lesser Key of Solomon and start conjuring specific demonic entities.
Exactly.
That's how you get possessed. That's how we get movies like Paranormal Activity. Which we love.
Yes, we do.
But we don't want to live in.
So, okay. Next spell.
Next spell. Okay. Crown of Success. This is something I've used multiple times.
I've used it a couple times. It's worked for me.
Mm-hmm. We use the Crown of Success oil that we made,
mm-hmm.
which is
Yeah, well, Corey and I came up with our own recipe.
Oh, it's so good. I don't think we can make it again. It's so good. It's just
like, we wrote down the recipe somewhere.
I know we did, but like I just feel like maybe we did something. Maybe we turned around three times. Or, I don't know what we did.
We clicked our heels together.
But man, every time I use it, it's so effective.
Mm-hmm.
And so I keep a couple of bottles of this stuff on hand,
right?
You know, accessible wherever I go.
Really?
Uh huh. And like I use it to create. I've got a mojo bag that I've been using for school, every day I anoint it with this oil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to let you know, it's a Crown of Success Mojo bag. So it includes a Hijon root, some pieces of gravel root. And I believe I did either rosemary for the studying aspect of things, because rosemary helps with remembrance.
Mm, cool.
And Shakespeare's Ophelia talks about rosemary. That's for remembrance.
Oh.
So I did either that, or I did frankincense for holiness and purity and focus. Can't remember which one I did now, but it's one of those two. And then I anoint it with this oil every day, and I have a little piece of paper with a specific phrase from a psalm
held
up in there too. So I do those. I use those kinds of things all the time. If I have something for work that I really want success with, I'll usually anoint it with a little bit of the oil, or I'll bring a candle into work and have a piece of paper with a little bit of the oil on it that I'll put under the candle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll light the candle for a few minutes, because we don't have a policy against lit candles at work.
Oh, well, that's cool.
So, you know, I get to use it a lot. I used it one time about a year ago. I asked for a raise. Mm-hmm. This is when the economy was kind of tanking.
Mm-hmm.
And our company is doing really well. We're actually a fairly profitable company. But the average raise for the year was something like 8% for across the board that people were getting. I know this because I'm in the HR department. So the average raise is about 8% across the board at our company. And I was asking for something like 16%.
Damn.
And got it.
Wow.
But, you know, anointing this little like request that I was turning in, and then I had a meeting, and they're like, yes, you're a vital and essential part of our company. You may have the money that you're requesting.
Nice. So tell about the other one though, where you won the,
Oh, I totally forgotten about that. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
At work also, I work for a very cool company. I'll just tell you this.
Yes, he does. I'm jealous.
Every month we have these employee meetings where we get free food brought in. That's cool enough as it is. There are also these drawings for Employee of the Month and Idea of the Month, where you get $100 cash for being either of those. That's also very cool. And then we have these random door prizes that mm-hmm. come from meetings. Sometimes they're things like $50 gift cards to restaurants or something like that. Well, back around Valentine's Day, our CEO, who's a very cool lady, brought in this big box, heart-shaped box of chocolates. And each chocolate had a little pin in the top of it with a flag on it. And she announced that there was going to be some sort of special prize drawing having to do with the box of chocolates. And I don't know why. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna try this. You know, I'd really like some success with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a few drops of the Crown of Success oil on my hands, because, like I said, I carry it with me at all times, and rubbed it in about 5 minutes before the meeting actually started. I did that. And then about halfway through the meeting, she gets out the box of chocolates, and everybody gets to come and pick one. And as soon as I walked up there, I knew exactly which one I was going for. And I was, you know, one of the first ones.
Right.
And I went for one of the numbers I consider my lucky numbers. I was like, yeah, I totally want that one. And I grabbed it and took it back to my seat. We weren't allowed to look at the bottom of the chocolates until we sat down. And everybody sat down. And whoever had a red dot on the bottom of their chocolate won the prize.
Mm-hmm.
I flip it over. And this is, you know, the statistics are not huge. It's like 1 in 35.
Okay.
So it's not like, this is not like a 1,000-person company and I'm the only one
who right. won it. It's not like you won the lottery.
Right. This is not that kind of phenomenal. But I flip over this chocolate. I've got the red dots. I'm like, okay, I got the red dot. And she's like, okay, come up here and get your prize. She hands me this little plastic case. And I open it up. There's a piece of paper folded inside of it. And I open it and open it and open it. And in the center of that piece of paper is almost a 1-carat diamond that she's giving away. This thing is like worth $1,200, it turns out. So like, yeah, I really like that oil.
Well, and you ended up giving it to your wife, because it was a
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, very fun. And it was unset. Like, it was just a loose gemstone. Mm-hmm. So
I was able to give that to my wife as a Valentine's Day gift, which was awesome because, like, I got to give my wife a $1,200 diamond for nothing. But it worked out perfectly. So yeah, absolutely amazingly good.
Yeah. And I've used it myself. I had my husband rub some on his hands before he left for a job interview that he ended up getting, that he's loving right now.
He's doing some crazy travel, too. Like, really cool places.
Yeah.
So, very cool.
Yeah. I'm getting some good souvenirs.
Liquors of the world.
No. But, so yeah, that it's definitely effective. We can both testify to that.
Indeed.
Okay. Let's see. What's next for me? Okay. Speaking of success with my husband, I did a spell for him. He just was out of college. It was my senior year still. So, you know, I was still in school. And he was having a really hard time finding a job, which shouldn't have been that hard because he's in, computers and really smart, and, you know, stuff that's way over my head. You know, coding, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I decided to do this spell for him, and I don't know why. Like, I laid on the whammy for some reason. But
yeah, you kind of hedged the bets there.
Yeah, I mean, he was just getting really discouraged and, you know, really wanted to help him find a job. So anyway, I had him give me, like, some money that was special to him. So he gave me a Susan B. Anthony dollar that, like, he'd had for a while, his father had given him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think everyone, like, goes through, like, a coin collecting phase at some point. I know I did. But I had an uncut emerald and a tiger's eye that I used. Then I also did, like, candle magic in it as well. I used 5 candles.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were all different colors. One was, I used black, orange, blue, yellow, and green.
Okay.
And black was for absorbing negativity.
Basically, take off any bad luck that might be.
Yeah, and also within himself as well, because I know he was feeling kind of downtrodden about it. So, orange, which I'd read was for, you know, success and just sort of happy feelings. You know, it's a pretty bright, happy color. Yellow for friendship, because ideally, you know, you want to like the people that you're working for.
Mm-hmm.
Green for, you know, success, money, and
blue
was for, you know, calm. Serenity, you know, just so he could go into the interview and nail it and not be nervous, because he, you know, he tends to get nervous pretty easily when it comes to that type of stuff, which I totally understand. I have panic attacks when I think about interviewing for jobs. Mm-hmm. So I put them on, like, I arranged them in the form of a star, and I lit them in the invoking pentagram way. So, like, you know, I think it starts at the left one. And then it goes over like that. I think that's invoking.
I think so, too.
And then, you know, so I said, like, I lit the black one first. And, like, black for banishing negativity. And then I would pass the gemstones through it. And I used, you know, emerald, obviously, for success and money. And the tiger's eye for courage. So you could go in there and be confident about it. And then, so I passed each gemstone through. And, like, the coin was because it sort of represented him. I guess it was like a signifier. So I passed each of those through the flames each time I lit one. And then I sat all those in a yellow mojo bag.
Okay.
In the center of what you know, like the star that the candles made. And I let those burn down for a while. And I just sort of like chanted and meditated a little bit over them. And then I gave the bag to him and I said, okay, you know, carry this with you. The job interview, and got it. Next one that he went to. And he still... The bag has since disintegrated, but he still carries the 2 stones and the coin with him every day to work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You said he recharged that a little bit since then.
Yeah, I have. I didn't do, like, the big candle thing again, but I rubbed it with a Crown of Success.
Of course.
And with his new job that he got, you know, like I said, I made him rub some on his hands before he went in. So.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, like you said, he didn't have to do a full elaborate thing the second time around. It'd been charged once. It knew what it was going to do.
Right.
Maybe just need a little, you know, pep talk.
Right, because it'd been 3 years, 4 years. So, Yeah.
Any mojo that can last that long, I would be amazed. I mean, some people have ones that last their whole life, I guess.
Right. But... I think because my husband still associates it with, you know, power, and like it's almost become like a little talisman for him.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
No, like, absolutely.
Like, it's not necessarily a mojo bag anymore. It's,
right.
It's sort of attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
I love that.
So.
Neato. Those are some of our most successful spells. And we've talked a good bit about our philosophy as far as spells go, but there are a few things that I would still like to throw out there. One thing we've mentioned is the idea of, you know, what do you learn from books? Do you do it intuitively? I think there's a third sort of road to that, which is knowing it by memory. Having it in your head.
Yeah.
Where it's not necessarily something that you go to a book to read anymore. It's not something that you necessarily are making up.
Right. It's just become a part of you.
Exactly.
Well, that's why I think my finding spell thing works so well, because I can just stop, center myself, and say it, and boom, it's there. You know, I don't have to go, oh, wait, let me go get that book. And, like, you know, my head is automatically there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really think of anything else I have in my head like that. I mean, I know there's a couple more, but anyway, it really does work.
I agree 100%. Like, that's one of the reasons I think that blood stopping charm works is because, you know, I made the effort to commit that to memory.
Right.
And, you know, and there was something about hearing it and saying it enough times that it clicked.
You know, I'll say this too. I really feel like that's why some rituals work better. Like, if you have them memorized.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's not reading off of pages, which granted, it is really hard to remember, you know, a new ritual every 3 months, but
that's why some covens have like books of shadows that have a formatted
for each
basic
one,
ritual
exactly.
that you do the exact same way. Fundamentally, the core structure is the same every time you do it.
Right. And there's definitely something to be said for that, because ritual is called ritual for a reason. It puts you into a higher state of mind.
Yes.
So...
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be learning new spells. One of our favorite books is the Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells.
Right.
There's no way we've read every spell in that book.
Well, I have read them. I just haven't actually done.
Have you read every spell in that book?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed.
When I got it, I was like fascinated with it. So I just went through and read the whole thing.
Oh, I just made a huge order from Amazon. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to pour over this book because I got her one of her other books, which is All the Spirits.
Oh. Cool.
So we'll have to pour over that together
and
look at it. I'm so impressed. but it's not like we commit all of those spells to memory.
Right.
But if one takes us, we might.
Yeah.
We very well might commit it to memory. And I think there's something really valuable to be said for a magical worker, you know, be they a root doctor or a witch or a powwow that has a certain sort of repertoire of spells at their fingertips, at their mental fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know, you know, the five or six spells that sort of define your practice, then the other spells that you do are good and probably will work just fine. But those five or six spells are really the core of who you are.
Right.
And I think that's really important. It's sort of like how people have a system of divination that they will eventually learn.
Or one that you're drawn to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, usually it's one that they eventually can do without consulting anything. They can, you know.
And those tend to be better readings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I'm still learning tarot. Corey got me a pack of awesome ones. They're bunnies. Yay.
I know, people. You heard right. I bought bunny something or other.
If you haven't listened to our media mania episode, then you will find out that Corey is deathly afraid of certain kinds of bunnies. Stemming from a bad childhood experience, but anyway, I love them, so he has slowly grown to appreciate bunnies.
I appreciate bunnies.
So anyway, he got me some bunny tarot cards, and I love them, but you know, I'm still learning like the meanings of tarot cards. Obviously, I mean, it's a huge deck when you include the minor arcana, and but Corey does playing cards, and you know, there's like a poem that goes with it that helps him remember. And it's usually a better reading because he intuitively knows what this card means. Like, it's not just sitting there while we flip through pages and goes, oh, okay, well, this means this. And then we have to stop and think about it. Like, he just knows. And it's I mean, Corey gives some really good card readings.
Thanks. I appreciate that. But yeah, it definitely comes from, and the thing is, like, that poem is one of the things I've learned, but I've developed such a relationship with, well, one, with those cards, because they were my mother's cards.
Right.
And two, with just that system in general.
Right.
That the poem gives me a lot of information, but that was, the poem was not the first way I learned it. The first way I learned it was, you know, I memorized every one of the cards. I memorized, like, little 1 to 2 word snippets about each one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that still comes in sometimes where I'm like, okay, that Jack, you know, I know the Jacks are supposed to be a messenger girl or a youth in the poem, but I also know that Jacks can represent the potential for a child in the solar system, I know. And I'm always looking for other interpretations that, you know, see if they fit or see if they click with me.
Right.
But I mean, it's like what we're saying is, you know, having that developed relationship, you know, memorizing these things. And I'm not saying memorize them like, it's like the Battle of Hastings was 1066. It's not rote memorization for the sake of memorizing, but really developing the inner love, the inner relationship for certain magical tools and practices.
Yes.
I think it's vital.
Yes.
Well, all right, now that we've settled that hash.
but yeah, there's also like another way to come at it, or I don't even know if it's on the same thing with what we were talking about, but like, I feel like there's certain spells that are just sort of like in the consciousness of everyone. Mm. Sometimes even like non-witches.
Sort of a Jungian spell?
Yeah. Archetypical spells.
You know what? And I think we've illustrated that tonight the Seek and Find spells.
Yeah.
Because I learned that very much as a Catholic.
Yeah.
That was how I first learned that. You did it very much from a witchy point of view.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think there's something to be said for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People call upon guardian spirits just like they would call upon guardian angels, you know. Sure, yeah, I buy that.
I mean, I don't really have a point in saying that. I just think it's interesting, I guess.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. There's another road there, which is sometimes spells don't come from books or from pure momentary intuition or from a memorization or anything like that.
It's like they're part of the subconscious or the culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're culturally understood. So good call. Good call on that. And one other thing I think that might be fun to just kind of throw in there, just to fill the last couple of minutes here.
Okay.
It's a debate I've heard sort of tossed around a little bit. But if somebody's learning from books, if somebody's, you know, trying to find their most successful spells, trying to find their best spells, does the age of the book matter?
Hmm.
Does it matter if you're using spells that have been handed down for generations versus, you know, one somebody just made up last week?
Well, I guess I'd ask, how did they make them up?
Okay.
Because Amy wrote that one that we use, and it's very effective. And that's like, what, 4 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not four. That's a lot older than that, but like, I don't know why I said that. What would it be by now?
Almost 10.
Yeah, about 10.
Maybe. Makes you feel old, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But I never asked her, like, what state of mind she was in when she wrote that. But, like, you know, if I just grabbed a book and it was, you know, written a month ago. But, like, did they just pull it out of thin air? Like, were they building on other writers?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it, like, an intuition thing where they just kind of felt that it was right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it has any bearing, personally. What about you?
I think you're kind of getting at how I feel about it too, which is if it works, doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, it really doesn't matter. I do tend to default to if it's been handed down through generations, there's probably a reason it survived this long.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, like, you know that saying that there's nothing new under the sun?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anything like a new spell is truly new because you're still probably going to be using, like, you know, the same type of ingredients,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, old, like, correspondences that everyone mm-hmm. understands.
Because it's a language.
Exactly.
And so you're speaking a language that, to me, has to have some roots.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can come up with, you know, clever really phrases.
That's a really good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely speaking this
or
language.
New metaphors, but you're saying the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. As we're doing now, we're layering a metaphor on top of it.
Oh,
it's a meta metaphor.
Oh my god.
But yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely right on that. And like I said, I default to thinking old text good, not because I think new text bad, but because I think old text is here for a reason.
Right.
You know, there's a reason that the clavicula salmonellus has, salmonellus, the key of Solomon, to sound not pretentious and to not mispronounce it and make it sound like you got food poisoning. So the key of Solomon, I think there's a reason that has made it as far as it has in our mm-hmm. history. You know, same way that I think that, you know, the Bible is actually a really good source of magical lore and magical phrases. It's made it to us for a reason.
Well, a little less inclined to agree with that one. But then again, I'm not very comfortable with using stuff from the Bible.
No, and I totally understand.
Yeah, that. I know you do. You're really cool about it, but, you know.
But it's this sort of feeling like, I think that there are things out there that sort of we don't know about that might be helping us, might be guiding us, and that they may have some influence on how these books make it to us.
Interesting.
And that's just my sort of spirity head thing. But yeah, so I default to thinking old book probably better, but not at the expense of saying new book bad. Right. I don't think new books are bad. I think new books actually have a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning in school right now. Is, you know, you can be talking about people who've been dead for 300 years for as long as you want, and the conversation's never going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you've got with these books. They're having the same conversation. They're just having new parts of it.
Right.
And I like that. So yeah. So that special turned into almost a full episode.
Yeah.
I feel like we should do a song and dance or something just to fill it out. But at any rate, if you want to contact us,
yes,
feel free to do so at the website, which is http://newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Of course, there's always email, which is probably going to be a better bet since we're on hiatus still.
Yes, we're still on hiatus, people.
Yeah, despite the podcast.
Bug us. Leave us alone. No, we love hearing from you. Actually, we miss email.
Yeah, we do. So email us at compassakey@gmail.com.
Okay. And that's it for this episode. So thanks for listening.
Hope you enjoyed it. Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Grifos Muertos by Jeffrey Luck Lucas and is available on Magnatune.com.